This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Discover Lafayette is recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work. We understand. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Today's guest is Zach McMath, president of the Acadiana Food Hub and a native of Lafayette, with a family history deeply involved in the distribution of food. Zach is a man with a mission to create affordable opportunities and space for local food producers, caterers, and budding entrepreneurs. Zach has worked tirelessly and expended his own resources to allow locals to sell their farm products and food wares while staying in compliance with a myriad of state and federal regulations governing the distribution of food products. So, Zach, I want to welcome you to Discover Lafayette, and I really can't wait to hear about not only Acadiana Food Hub, but Acadiana Incubator Kitchen and the Acadiana Commissary Kitchen. It's a mouthful.
Sure.
And trying to understand it, it's taken me a while to understand the depth of what you've been doing. So thank you for joining us today.
I appreciate you having us, Jan.
Thank you. So you're a Lafayette native.
I'm born and raised here. Dad's birth certificate actually is the same place as our business,
our
warehouse for M&M Sales, 300 Eros Landry. So we've been here a very long time. Grandfather was a Thomas Peanut salesman in 1952. Parents started the vending company in 72, and brother and sister and 81 employees all work there.
M&M.
At M&M Sales, right? And so this was an opportunity to kind of step out of that and put what I've learned from, you know, growing up in this kind of economy and what I've understood from living in Lafayette were needs in our community. You know, it was very difficult for local food companies to find local farmers,
right?
And find, you know, local companies to support. And so we needed clearly the space and the infrastructure to provide for those people. So the farmers often need a place to be able to store their products and maybe need refrigerated trucking and having a background in food distribution. You see where those gaps exist for a lot of these, you know, people in this economy. And so we wanted to provide resources that made it affordable for them to be able to share. That's really what the Acadiana Food Hub is. It's a nonprofit to support local farmers and our access to them. Inside of there is a couple kitchens that provide space for food entrepreneurs. That's what you mentioned earlier was the Acadiana Commissary Kitchen and Incubator Kitchen. Those have been extremely important for as pieces of infrastructure for growing culinary entrepreneurs. Many people that are maybe making food out of their house or maybe you're interested in a food truck or anything don't realize that you need an actual commercial kitchen to operate out of, right? If you're a food truck, you need a commissary to be able to dump your water and fill up with fresh water and park your truck. And so it's going to be very expensive things for people getting into the industry for the first time. And so the Food Hub really allows for shared use space that people can access this at a lot less risk, a lot less cost, and really figure out if this is what they want to do, if they want to grow, and if so, then have the resources to do that. But really test that out with a little less risk.
I want to take a step back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to hear about each one of these. And I want to get into that you have been involved in helping other nonprofits. Like I read about the EarthShare Gardens. I'm trying to go back.
Oh, yeah, we can really go back. Oh, sure.
You have helped people involved in food growing and distributing to not only the wealthy for retail outlets, but you have been involved in all levels.
It's a pretty unique perspective.
Happen.
Right.
And there are very few farmers locally too. So while I do want to get those details, I want to let you tell just a couple of minutes of that story. Bringing it back to the source of growing food and what we actually have here, like the average age of a farmer.
Sure. Yeah.
What kind of is going into your mind as you help local entrepreneurs?
Right. So growing up in the food business and distributing, you kind of understand what's there on a national standpoint. You know how kind of big food works. It was really interesting to see how local food works. And one of the
Small local food
and how that works. And I really got, a sense of what that was like when I started a cold pressed juice company with my now ex-wife at the farmer's market at the horse farm when it first started. And we were wanting to be responsible and stewards of the earth, and we knew that a lot of our clientele was, you know, treating themselves for, you know, cancer and chronic illness, so we wanted to make sure we gave them the best possible thing. And so we were sourcing from local farmers that we knew were sustainably growing, and we could see the transparency in their food and what they were spraying on them or not. And so we were sourcing from local farmers to the farmers market. And as that company grew, we were continually trying to source local, and continuously became more and more difficult. And so
to,
we realized
to identify
farms, to have them consistently, to operate a business using local farmers, right? So as a restaurant, it became very clear that there are some huge hurdles to getting local farmers into restaurants.
Because you always hear about farm to table, but it's not just easy to make that happen.
It's also kind of a small market, and it's difficult to do that. So that farmer has to be able to go and drive to different restaurants and maintain those relationships, and be at an affordable cost, and, you know,
And be a farmer.
We're asking them to be entrepreneurs and salesmen and distributors and everything when they're farmers, and they really should be having their resources in the best thing they know. I don't grow food. I help to move it, and I help to find markets for these kinds of things. And so we really wanted to find and give access to local farmers more markets, so restaurants and grocery stores and things like that.
So that's when you really became aware of this,
how difficult
this
it
issue.
Is. So it was really apparent when we had a freeze about 4 years ago, and the highways were shut down. So I-49 was shut down and I-10 was shut down, and none of the farmers could get here from Alexandria and Jennings and McCharles.
Oh, gosh. And it's...
Right. And, so, and our business is to source
perishable.
Local farmers.
Yeah.
So... there's freezes. They literally can't drive down the highway, and we're at the farmer's market on Saturday, and none of the farmers show up. There's still some vendors, and we're still there, right? But we're down for business because there's no supply of anything to juice to sell. And that morning, the mayor at the time, Joey Durrell, walks up to the booth, as he did every Saturday morning, with his empty jar to go and, you know, refill his jar of juice.
Oh.
And we said, sorry, Mr. Joey, we don't have anything to juice. There are no farmers here, so we can't source anything. And
he looks, right.
And so he looks, and he's like, yeah, he kind of shakes his head, and he says, you know, I figured there wouldn't be a whole lot of farmers here. You know, Lafayette only has a 2-day fresh food supply. And I went, no, Mr. Mayor, that kind of seems like something we should be working on. You know, and that had me really looking, because I got back to my office and I realized that I'm sitting there sourcing $16 million of food to go all over Acadiana and South Louisiana, but it's really hard to source local food and fresh food.
Fresh.
So what are those missing pieces of resources? What's that lack of infrastructure? What are the barriers to entry for farmers and into those markets? How do we make it easier for a restaurant to be able to source from local farmers? The school system to be able to get, you know, delivery to all of their schools from a series of farmers? I mean, those are difficult things for any one farmer to do by themselves.
So when we hear about food insecurity, it's not just necessarily for people that are homeless or don't have money. Things could shut down pretty quickly if there was a transportation issue or
it's a very
like
doomsday thing to maybe look at, but I mean, we got a hurricane coming. Tell me what the grocery stores are going to look like in a couple of days. I mean, it's you know, we've all been there. When we saw it in Harvey and Katrina, we saw it during these freezes, and we know that it's something that affects us. It's just a matter of being able to support that and having access to it. We all want, you know, food that's fresher, that lasts longer and everything else, but it's hard to find just maybe Saturday morning at the farmer's market.
Right.
So food access was important, and really breaking down those barriers. And as somebody that understood distributing and cost of goods and things like that, this was a real opportunity to take what I've learned and what I've been able to learn from growing up in this city that has been, you know, so good to us and been allowed us to be able to operate businesses here. This is an incredible way to be able to give back and to fill in some gaps where it was very difficult for some people to do.
So I've, from my reading and just knowledge of some of this issue, y'all were looking first at Coburn's downtown. Is that when they're like?
So Acadiana Food Alliance was looking at Coburn's. They wanted to save the building downtown, and the way they wanted to save it was to create a food hub there.
And that didn't come about.
I think they saved the building.
They saved the building.
I think they were having issues funding a build out. I mean, it's very, very expensive to do that. And so me and a developer developed this space that we have now at the Acadiana Food Hub and built two commercially, you know, commercial kitchens for FDA and USDA food and retail food and, you know, a warehouse storage for it all and parking for it all that would have been relatively difficult to do in remodeling an old building.
I would like to shout out to Hammy Davis.
Hammy Davis, right. It should be said that Hammy Davis has made all of this possible. And without his support and his understanding of this mission and how valuable it is and it's really its impact, we would not be able to do this. So Hammy Davis deserves all the credit in the world for this being able to continue to survive. But we need the community to help us continue to do
right.
that, too.
So you're located in Upper Lafayette, north mm-hmm. of
just north I-10, of I-10. Correct.
On University.
University in Renaud. So uh-huh. kind of on the corner there, same building as Elliott Electrical Supply. We've got a 7,500 square feet. And yeah. it's a great piece of infrastructure, and it's getting used. We've had more people in the last 3 months using our facility mm-hmm. and using our kitchens than in the entire first year. So it's a matter of really, we're getting some momentum. It's just a matter of keeping it here so that people can continue to use it.
Right.
At a point where we've gotten to about 60 to 75% fill of our space and our time, then we're sustainable. We're just not quite yet there, and we need some time to get there.
Right. Yeah. So people can rent space from you, Zach, and they can rent hourly or monthly. And I know you're looking, you prefer stability of tenants, but for all of what you're doing, this is available at low cost for local entrepreneurs.
Extremely low cost.
Yeah.
And in a number of different ways. So yeah, we can do monthly, but we have some people that come in hourly. So mm-hmm. food trucks will go and operate and maybe come in at 3 o'clock in the morning and wash dishes.
Right.
So it's the facility runs 24/7. Yeah, it's a matter of people using it and that they can continue to have these resources available.
Okay.
Yeah.
So which one should we talk about first? Because I want people to understand who you're helping. So is it best to start with Acadiana Food Hub?
Yeah, the food hub, yeah, that's the farmer support. Mm-hmm. That's really the infrastructure and a lot of the consulting and brokering that goes along with that. That's the housing infrastructure for the two kitchens, and the two kitchens help to fund it and to have some income for
right.
that.
So farmers contact you, they have produce that they want to sell, distribute.
Right. Yep, they can go to Acadiana Food Hub, and they'll very quickly be able to get in touch with me, and uh-huh. we'll talk about what they have, what they want to sell. We'll also talk about where they are in their market. So they may be at a farmer's market and not have the insurance necessary to go into a grocery store. They may not have the right paperwork, and oftentimes they don't know they need any of that.
Right.
So really this is an opportunity to say, okay, here's the status of your company, and we do that for farmers, but we also do that for retail and wholesale people.
Yeah.
All of these people need the resources to help go through those steps and navigate really a lot of red tape and a lot of issues that can be yeah. hard to navigate and very costly to navigate.
I printed yeah. out, I forgot to bring it, but the two pages, you have a primer for people on what they need to do to start a business.
Yep.
To,
I call it a punch list. I mean,
yeah.
it starts with like register your company with the Secretary of State.
It's well done.
Go to
yeah.
servesafe.com for your food safety handling, where
your
to find
insurance.
Cheaper insurances.
Yeah.
And in some cases, if you're a wholesale producer, where to go for barcodes or nutritional facts panels mm-hmm. or product testing and things like that.
Right.
It's an answer to a question that somebody's going to have eventually if they want to get their product to market. They might as well have those resources and available to them,
and not have their products seized if they're not in compliance with
that's
regulations.
A nightmare, right? Yeah.
Right.
Making it somewhere that's not approved, and then your product is seized. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to lose some money doing that,
right?
Likely,
and then you get into real.
So yeah,
legal fees.
We have people that yeah. come in really just sometimes on an hourly basis and do production. Mm-hmm. So probably the first one we want to talk about is the Acadiana Commissary Kitchen.
Okay,
that's the one for retail food producers. So again, any food truck that needs a place to park, mm-hmm. they're going to go to the health department and say, I want to open a food truck, and they're going to say, where's your commissary? Okay. Now there's a space that actually exists to do that. So we put 5 new food trucks in business in the last year with simply providing space at an affordable rate that allows them to operate.
So you can't just go buy a food truck and start making waffles?
Yeah, you can. In order to do that, you have to go and get your own commercial kitchen to operate out of, because you can't make the food out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
You can't store the stuff in your house, and you have to have a place that's approved to be able to fill up with water, because they don't want you doing that from the hose from your backyard that may be contaminated, right?
Right.
So they want to know, be able to test your water system. So the food hub basically removes all the barriers of infrastructure and gives you kitchen space and all the equipment that you would need to be able to just act on your business, not have to invest a 5-year lease and $200,000 in equipment and hire staffs and things like that just to figure out whether your concept is there or not.
And you're the only commercial kitchen of this type that people can
this is
with.
The only space like this in the state.
Mm-hmm.
LSU has an incubator for wholesale food businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That, from my understanding, that's booked right now, so they're maxed out. New Orleans has some retail places for like food trucks and things like that, but mm-hmm. there's nowhere else in the state where all of these exist, and what better place for all these things to exist than our culinary culture of
right.
Acadiana, right?
Right.
Clearly we have the need for all of these things, and we have food producers that need the ability to be able to grow their things. So the commissary kitchen is for those food trucks, for those caterers who you may be doing one wedding a month, right? Come into the kitchen for 8 hours, cater your wedding, and then be able to go out and deliver that.
To be legal, they have to have
right.
a commercial kitchen
right.
that's
You can't do that out of your house,
uh-huh.
right? And you don't need it every single day.
Right.
So, I mean, removing the barrier of like needing full-time space and, mm-hmm. and needing to afford that entire month's rent is really shared between everyone that uses the space. And right. so we need people sharing it. And right now we need people, you know, supporting it until we can get mm-hmm. enough people sharing it. Right.
And I love when I was visiting you, looking at the big commercial equipment that you have, like to make gumbo, these huge pots.
One of the things that was really important is if you've got a, we can go across the hall. So, right. the Acadian Incubator Kitchen is there for those wholesale producers. So you think about somebody that's doing, 3 gallons of barbecue sauce on their electric stove at home and they're bottling it by hand. Mm-hmm. Then they can come move to our facility and use a 30-gallon tilt kettle and a piston-driven pneumatic filler, and they're getting 1,000 jars done in the time that it used to take them to do 100 jars, mm-hmm. right? And so that allows them to, number one, break down the cost of their product so that it can go into market, but they also have a product with a barcode and a label and everything on it that allows them to go and sell it at a grocery store or anything. Because if you walk into a grocery store right now with a bag of seasoning and say, do you want to put this on yourself, they're going to... Number one, they're going to say no, it's not ready yet. And so we need people to get ready to enter that market.
Right.
So this allows them to come in and make maybe 1,000, 2,000 jars, prove out that people can order it, you know, be able mm-hmm. to go to grocery store and say, hey, I've already sold these 1,000. We know that we have a market. Or test them out, right? Mm-hmm. But it allows us to not have to go in and make 10,000 of something at a co-packer and hope that we can sell it in the next 6 months.
Well, you had told me that when Whole Foods came in, they were looking for local products.
Right.
And people showed up for a meeting, mm-hmm. and maybe you can tell the story.
Yeah, so when Whole Foods first came to town, they have what they call a forager, and their forager's job is to go and find local companies to put into their local stores, right? They do this sort of regionally, so our mm-hmm. local forager was out of Houston. So they came in, and at LEDA, at Lafayette Economic Development Authority, had a how to get your product into Whole Foods meeting. Mm-hmm. There were like 200 people in the room.
Oh, I bet they were excited.
It was right. It was really exciting. And so me coming out of a farmer's market and having all the people in the farmer's mm-hmm. market there, and they're all learning how they're about to, you know, get their big break because they're going to get it into Whole Foods, and then that's going to go well, and they're going to get into all the Whole Foods, and that's going to be it, right? That's going to be huge. And so we're in that meeting, and there's hundreds of people standing in this room. If you've ever been in that room, it can
room. Yeah.
It can sit like 100. Mm-hmm. So they were like 200, and they were all standing around. And the forager is, giving a presentation. She gets about halfway through it, and she says, "And to get your product onto our store shelves, you need to be made in a registered commercial kitchen." And half the room kind of just, exhales, right? Mm-hmm. And this lady stands, this sweet little lady stands out in the middle of the alley, the kind of walkway, and she says, "You raise her hand, and she says, you're telling me that to get my brownie that I make at the farmer's market into Whole Foods, I have to find a commercial kitchen?" Mm-hmm. And she says, "Uh-huh." And half the room kind of goes, "Oh,
darn.
I mean, where am I going to find one of those?" I mean, this is 3 years ago. And so I turn around and go, well, clearly we need a space like this in Acadiana to support all of these people on a very mm-hmm. small basis so that she can come in and make her brownies and we can put it on the store shelves.
And they'll have a shelf life.
You'll have a wrapping machine. You'll have a wrapping machine that can wrap 50 of your brownies mm-hmm. per minute.
With the barcode.
With the barcode and nutritional facts. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's extremely important. It's huge. I mean, the machine's $40,000. You're not going to go out and buy that day one. The food processor is like $17,000. You're not going to go use that to make your dough or to grind your cauliflower mm-hmm. into rice. So it's giving people larger equipment that makes them more efficient, which in turn makes their business more successful and can help them understand what their growth needs to look like.
And grows our economy.
And clearly grows our economy. Yeah. Right. We actually... To go back to the commissary kitchen and putting those food trucks in business, we actually had another food truck graduate into a storefront this past week.
Who is that?
Kitchen on Clinton. Wings and Things is over on University, the old linebackers or Gallagher's, right across from campus. There's four guys that graduated from UL. They worked on this food truck. They built a food truck. They didn't order one from somebody. They built it. They built it. It's pretty amazing. It's a trailer. But they needed a place to be able to park.
A tiny restaurant.
Yeah. Right. And they needed a place to be able to park, and they needed a place to be able to store all their stuff, because as they get busier and busier, they needed walk-in freezers and coolers, and they need a place to put those walk-in freezers and coolers and an affordable way to rent those. Mm-hmm. So if they do move out, they're not trying to figure out what they're going to do with the coolers and freezers. So now they've been able to actually open their own storefront. They had their grand opening last week, actually.
That's exciting. But you gave them a safe space to...
To be able to
work.
To test it out, exactly.
Not go broke.
Yeah. Everybody's on their own timeline. Everybody's only as successful as really they can be. We can give them all the resources. I often say you can leave a horse to the trough, but you can't make them drink.
Yeah.
giving people at least that punch list lets them know where they stand, right? So, okay, I need, you know, $175 to go through my ServSafe, and I need $125 for the Secretary of State. Maybe gives them a little a way to better budget, you know, how they're going to go about this. But the guys on Kitchener-Clinton were able to grow fast and you know, build a clientele that's just die hard, and they've been very successful. That eventually became, that demanded them to have their own place. They could have been in a place where they said, we're not selling nearly enough and we need to be selling our truck, reevaluating our menus, cutting costs, and but work through that, don't have a huge note, and also work through that. And that's the point, is to really give people the incubation space. You know, we're sitting here in the opportunity machine, or in Light Center that has the opportunity machine that like that does this, but they don't work on food stuff. We don't have a food business incubator, and now we do.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's just a food business incubator. And even in some cases, I mean, a lot of these people are producers and not necessarily entrepreneurs, so they need help with marketing. They may need help with websites or tech or different things. And so it's really a place that they can come in and say, I need these, you know, these things to help. And then we can help find them resources to do that.
So you don't do all that. You help them outsource.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't possibly.
Website,
right. I'm also not the best person at any of these things necessarily. I always like to find better people than me, you know, to help. So there are definitely things that I'll go, okay, I know who you can talk to for this, and guys kind of farm
affordable but, options. Yeah.
Right. But often, and oftentimes people come to us and say, hey, you know, we actually service the people that are coming to use this. If they have any issues or need anything, you can, you know, refer them to us.
Right.
Otherwise these producers wouldn't know who to talk to. Right. I mean, oftentimes they wouldn't know who to talk to.
So, let's hold that thought.
Yeah.
I want to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors, LUS Fiber, recently ranked by Harvard University as number one in the nation for price savings. A trailblazer in community broadband services, LUS Fiber can serve your telephone, internet, and television needs. For more information, please visit LUS Fiber. And I do want to thank them for their support of Discover Lafayette.
Yeah, fiber's awesome. It's really fast.
Yeah, I know. It's really fast.
It really is.
That should be in their ad, Zach.
You don't.
It's really fast.
You don't really notice it until you like go to somewhere in Lafayette that doesn't have it, or like right outside doesn't have it, and then like everything takes twice as long.
See, they didn't even know they were going to get this plug.
You know? No, it's important. Yeah. For somebody who multitasks as much as I do,
I know.
It's really important that I can have seven screens open at the same time. Thanks, fiber.
Don't make me laugh too much. You are a multitasker. So we're talking about three things with Zach McMahon.
Sure. Yeah.
Acadiana Food Hub, which is the hub
which
for
is the
infrastructure.
Yeah.
And the infrastructure. Acadiana Incubator Kitchen for people that are developing their products for sale in wholesale markets and retail businesses. And then the Acadiana Commissary Kitchen, which is a separate commercial kitchen space approved legally, I guess, by the USDA in the state.
Well, that one's for by DHH, and that's for like retail,
DHH.
For like caterers and food trucks.
So people can sell their wares and all.
Correct.
So my question is, you were in the meeting at LIDA. Mm-hmm. You saw where Whole Foods had opportunities, and that was just one example of a need in the market.
Yep.
You partnered with Hammy Davis,
correct,
who has the space, and he's helped you. You've put a lot of your personal money.
They developed a lot of that space, and then I put a lot of personal money into.
Number one,
outfitting it.
Right.
Right. To provide those, you know, pieces of equipment, because what are you going to do with just an empty kitchen? The resources that support it. So all of the. Well, the things besides rent that go into that.
So where are you right now? We're sitting here in September, early September 2018. The idea was, you know, conceived of about 3 years ago.
Right.
About a couple years ago.
We've been open for almost 2 years now, since construction's been done, basically. And it's taken a little longer than we thought to actually get people through those processes. So when you talk about bringing product to market and all that stuff, it could take months to do that. And so we're working with dozens of people to work through those processes.
How are you sustaining this financially? I know people pay rent, but it's not covering the whole expense, is it?
Right. So the usage is covering internal expenses. Rent has been donated by Simply Hammy Davis for the last pretty much year and a half, 2 years. that can clearly only last so long. And I say Hammy Davis as a landlord, that can only last so long. And so we talked with the city and with Lita to see how we can move forward. But right now, because I like to be a little proactive, we're spending September doing some fundraising. Mm-hmm. So we've got an Indiegogo that will be coming out. That will be finishing at the end of September. That's basically a crowdsource funding campaign.
Indiegogo.
It's kind of like Kickstarter or GoFundMe, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll get rewards from it. We'll have like dinners that you can actually get. And we're actually even offering the Kenya Food Hub is looking to bring some products to market. So if we can get basil from a local farmer, we can make pesto, bottle it, put it on grocery store shelves. We're actually going to be giving away the opportunity to be on those bottles. So the Acadiana Hub pesto will go into grocery stores, and you can be a sponsor of Acadiana Food Hub pesto as long as that brand and that those farmers are supported.
Hmm.
It's really great outreach for people.
That's really cute, though. Yeah. I love that.
So there's a lot of different things that will allow people to will get something back for participating and for helping, besides just the infrastructure existing, the access to local farmers and food, the affordability of that access to local farmers and food. For this space to exist has allowed Waiter to really come in, and we haven't even touched on this. But
I know, I wanted to get them in.
With the Acadiana Commissary Kitchen, not only is it food trucks and caterers, but it's virtual restaurants. Mm-hmm. So we can test a restaurant concept on Waiter for home delivery. So if you're nervous about opening your store, why don't you open on a Waiter for home delivery? Then you'll know where your store needs to be and whether people are actually going to buy it and what that menu needs to look at before you go and spend all that money and print that menu and find out that you've trained the whole staff to, not be able to sell half these things.
Right.
So really cover, get out of those risks of starting your own place, do it virtually, be on Waiter for one time a week for 6 months. And that will allow you to have, analytics and reports to go to a bank and say, these are my sales reports and I clearly need a loan. Or nobody bought any of my food. Thank God I didn't spend all that money and open a store in
mortgage
this neighborhood and mortgage my house.
Right.
So we realized virtual restaurant was a neat application, but
and then the farmers can have their
so we're working on a virtual grocery.
Yeah, delivered by Waiter.
So a virtual grocery of local farmers delivered to your home or business. And so, again, you need a kitchen to do that. You need warehousing to do that. You need an infrastructure. But for something to be open like that, like a just kind of a once a week thing to allow people to have more access, you need to be able to share that overhead. So we distribute produce via Waiter all over Lafayette once a week. You can order all week long, so you can go on Acadiana Food Hub on Waiter and see the menu and order. Deliveries are actually available between 5 and 7 p.m. on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So you can see the menu, you can order, just let us know when you're going to be home between 5 and 7 when you check out on Waiter, and we'll make sure it's there.
So you've got to be able to sustain this operation to keep
going. Some degree, a lot of these things go away. I mean, these food trucks will lose a home. These caterers will have to figure out some way to do, or in some cases, will go back to doing it at home in unsafe conditions, and hopefully they don't get sued because they're certainly not carrying insurance, making food out of their house because insurance isn't going to cover them. The ability to run this virtual grocery, to be able to aggregate farmers, to be able to park the trucks. I mean, it was clear when all of this was going down that we did not have the infrastructure to support these pieces of our economy. So it's clear we needed to build the infrastructure. I mean, it's kind of this, if you build it, they will come. Well, they're coming. They're just not coming quite fast enough. And so we just need really just kind of some more time to get more people in. And at that point, then we're a little more sustainable. The more people we get in there.
We take these things for granted. I'm talking about me. It just seems to me that, the Commissioner of Agriculture and all these different groups, government groups, I always assume that it's kind of a government thing.
It's an extremely important piece, so it seems like a utility.
It does.
And so to some degree, people kind of take advantage of it because they think it's just a utility. And, it has to exist, so it exists, and that's it. Like,
but you're there working all the time.
It exists because I put a whole lot of money into it, and because I volunteer every day to do it for the last 2 years, and because we had people that were willing to step in and help us in the beginning to build out the infrastructure.
Because you're working crazy hours for your family's company, right?
Yeah. So
I took
kind of like a year sabbatical, if you will. But what I ended up having to do was actually go back. And so I go back to M&M between 2 and 5 a.m. every morning, and I pull product that goes out all over Southwest Louisiana, frozen and fresh food, to go out. It goes to you know, stellar settings and CGI and mm-hmm. you know, Halliburton over in Lake Charles and stuff like that.
You're lucky to have a family business. You know, we've talked about that privately. You have a safety net.
To some degree, the communities do this. The community is lucky that we have a family business.
They are.
Right? Because otherwise, it's been very, very difficult to do.
Yeah. So you're looking at ways, though, Zach, to sustain this. You've given your heart and soul.
Right.
Hannah Davis has been
can't
an
be
underwriter.
Just this. And, yeah. and clearly, people are benefiting. I mean, the small food companies are benefiting. The economic impact is apparent. I mean, mm-hmm. you look at somebody like Wing Fingers. That was one of our first food trucks. They said in their first week of operating their food truck, they made paid $2,000 in taxes. They said their first week of operating their actual restaurant, they paid $20,000 in taxes, and they had 6 full-time employees instead of just 2 guys on a truck. Mm-hmm. So even that, I mean, you look at Kitchen on Clinton, they've got, I mean, at least for their grand opening, they had a dozen people working in there, right? And so it's clearly having an economic benefit mm-hmm. as these people grow, or these, you know, the producer like Basin Blend or Cousin Smokehouse, right? As they're able to grow out of our facility and go to co-packers and things like that, this money's staying here. They often talk about the food that we transport in and things. You know, it's really important to be able to support local businesses and keep mm-hmm. that money here as much as possible. And to be able to take a farm and put it into a bottle and be able to put it into a local grocery store, I mean, and have it manufactured here, that's all. It's all here. It's all benefit.
Yeah.
Rather than us sending somebody to a co-packer in some other state or mm-hmm. something like that, where we just get kind of the tail end of all of that.
Right.
We really wanted to bolster Lafayette's food economy. That clearly it number one can't support, but has a knack for. Nobody else in the country does what we do with Cajun food and has a culture that really exudes this the way that we do. And so it was clear that we had an opportunity economically to capitalize on our culinary culture, but we needed the catalyst, and you need infrastructure to be able to do mm-hmm. that. Otherwise, there's no place to even start.
And that investment has been made, so it's just a matter of continuing
it. It's there.
So for people that want to know more, Zach, whether they want to be involved or have a restaurant concept, want to order, want to support you maybe with the contribution. And this is a nonprofit, is that correct?
It is a 501c3 nonprofit.
So a donation, a contribution is totally
tax deductible.
What is the best way to contact you to know more about this?
AcadianaFoodHub.com. There is a contact us that goes directly to me.
And you're very good at responding.
It's pretty quick. It's not hard to find me. Besides that, there's each of those things has Facebooks and Instagrams. Yeah. Any message you send there, we're going to get them all. It's been a labor of love, and you're gonna talk to me, and we'll get you through the steps, right? Or at least give you the resources to help you get through those steps. I mean, that's the important part. We've been able to incubate. We've met with over 140 companies in the last year and a half, but not everybody is able to really get through all those steps, and there's certainly barriers to that financially, and there was the barrier of a facility. Now, the facility is not there, and now the space is a little more affordable, but still to get over those hurdles, it's sometimes maybe a few thousand dollars.
Right.
And so helping them, you know, address that, in some cases even get funding. So last year, partnering with Lita for a thing called Food Spark, mm-hmm. right, which is a culinary stipend program. We awarded $40,000 to new culinary startups. It was $5,000 each to each of those. And it was 6 wholesalers, 1 retailer, and a mushroom farm.
That's
actually
a fortune to somebody that's
$5,000 would do a whole lot to get you, I mean, sort of your first round of bottles and your label and your nutritional facts panel and just all those little things that were pretty big barriers. And so, you know, we gave people the resources to be able to start those things and grow. Mm-hmm. But none of those things really are helpful if you don't have the infrastructure.
Right.
Keep the infrastructure. So that's where I saw all the things that we wanted to do and all the ways that we wanted to support local food and we wanted to do this and have economic impact, mm-hmm. but we don't have an infrastructure to support it. So we kind of went out and just built that infrastructure for the community and we need help supporting it.
So this fundraiser in September, if they go to AcadianaFoodHub.com, on there?
It will be on the website.
Uh-huh.
You'll be able to see the fundraiser, the Indiegogo campaign, see how you can contribute and mm-hmm. what you can get for it. And we'll also be hosting an event at the Food Hub on September 30th. It's kind of an artisan fair to bring in small food producers, people that might want to go into the Food Hub, people that might be in the Food Hub or even graduated from it. Mm-hmm. And then a local farmer and chef pairing cook-off. So we'll bring in local farms that will bring things to chefs. They'll have a cook-off, and we'll you know, kind of have a little event.
Are you going to tape that? Are you televising that?
I don't know. We really haven't gotten that far.
But
it'll be at the food hub.
Yeah.
At that location.
Uh-huh.
And really so people can see what it is and how, you know, the vastness of the infrastructure and why it's so important and what it costs to do all this. And participate and get to taste some delicious food and and support the Acadiana Food Hub.
So, how much is it to attend that on September 30th?
The Eventbrite will be out soon.
Okay.
Check the website, and we'll have the Eventbrite and everything.
You're working out the details?
Yeah. Okay. We're looking at less than $50 per ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but depending on how we do it, we got some options. We're still meeting on that. So stay tuned. Definitely check that out.
Yeah.
But we're kind of just doing everything we can to make sure that we can keep this around for the community and keep it sustainable.
It's so impressive. I want to encourage people to visit Acadiana Food Hub and if possible, go out and visit just to see what's been done.
We're always giving tours.
Yeah, I know.
Love giving tours because when you see it, you go, oh, okay, I get it.
Right. Yeah, I get it now. I do. I didn't understand what you were doing. You know, we're in here with Jason Sikora of Raider Solutions, and I see Jason busily scribbling questions more than usual.
I'm scratching notes all over the place. I forgot to look back and made sure it was still recording a few times.
Did we record?
No, we recorded. Okay. No, we're good. Just normally have, like, my eye is always on it. And here, like, my eye's been on Zach the entire time with scribbling notes down.
Well, he is quite handsome. So
true. So first question, where do you get your energy and when do you sleep?
Usually like 9 to like maybe 1 or 2 in the morning, and there'll be a few hours. And I usually get a couple hours in after that.
Okay.
I try not to schedule meetings before like 9 or 10.
Got ya.
Plus, this is exciting. It's a blast. I love food. I love the food industry. I love the people. I mean, this is my heart. You know, it's easy to get out of bed when you're exhausted, when you enjoy doing what you do.
Yeah.
Right. That's where the energy comes from.
Yeah. Gaia. So in terms of the food hub, the commissary kitchen and the incubator, what was the biggest hurdle when getting those going, and any advice for anybody outside of say Louisiana that's listening to this, that wants to do something similar?
Oh yeah, sure. Great question, because it was not easy. When I first called Baton Rouge and said, I want to build a food hub, I called the health department and said, I want to build a food hub. And they said, what's that?
Great.
Right? And I said, and look, I mean, I had done research for better part of a year on these all across the country, what they should look like, how we wanted to set it up, what services they provide, and what services we need in our community. Mm-hmm. And we needed a lot of service in our community. Some food hubs will only do certain aspects of this, but we clearly were missing these sections. And so they said, you know, what's a food hub? And I started describing things like, you know, retail food and all these things. And they were like, you can't do that. You can't do that all in one place. And so it took a while to understand that we were dealing with different regulatory bodies. So right now I deal with DHH, FDA. I deal with two versions of USDA, the national and state. I think we've had like 15, 20 inspections in the last year because these are new tenants that are all being put up. So we have to get new inspections for each of these. And so regulatory hurdles, red tape. I mean, what's interesting is that we fund startups for these new companies and everything else, but we sort of had to incubate ourselves, right? Through some pretty significant barriers. It was very difficult to do this. And what we hope, as you say to other states, what we hope is that more areas of Louisiana will actually be able to support their local farmers and their local food producers and their local food trucks and commissaries, but without some sort of catalyst or example in Louisiana to do that. And it also makes it hard to recreate that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're part of a network of 700 other incubator and commissary kitchens across the country that help us to figure out how to do things right, use best practices, and address issues. It's daunting. I tell people, relatively recently, we don't want to do this again. it's extremely difficult.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Once you saw the food hub, you understood it. It took us 2 months to get the health department to come look at it.
And then they probably got it.
And then they walked through and went, oh, this makes sense. Okay, you can go ahead and do what you need to do. We were like, yeah, but that 2 months cost us, right? That's 2 months that we couldn't do things. I mean, you think about that cost, and now we're just trying to fund it, another few months and things.
Right.
It would have been nice if we wouldn't have had to hit those barriers before. Like I said, we put on a whole lot more people in the last 3 months than we ever did in the first year. Now that people are sort of getting the hang of using it and understanding how, and we've been able to break down those barriers.
Excellent. Yeah. So I had the advantage of chatting with you in the lobby beforehand, mm-hmm. and we talked a little bit about the vending machines and how technology is changing the way you deploy vending machines and are able to get analytics. And then you mentioned when we had the freeze and we couldn't get food from local farmers into Lafayette. Do you think, or do you see any sort of technology that could help assist that? Or is technology helping better get local food into local communities? Or is it still just putting stuff on a truck and driving down the road?
It's still pretty much putting stuff on a truck and driving down the road. In some cases, you have groups of distributors that can kind of help to cover things. So when the floods hit Denham Springs, Capital City Produce, who distributes to all the school systems and stuff here, was all underwater. Well, they have a backup out of like Missouri or something that's able to bring food down just in case.
Okay.
Which is a long way.
Is a long way, and just is a solution for a really big problem, and it's kind of a solution, right? There's a lot of solutions for this. This is not a silver bullet for food security or anything else, but this is certainly going to help. I mean, it helps. If nothing else, in the way that a farmer's market helps to give people markets and create an economy and access. But you have to have a place to grow out of those farmer's markets. I mean, what do you do when you're very successful and you still can't afford a restaurant? You got to have some place to go.
Yep.
Right? And I did that. I bought a food truck 4 years ago, went to the health department and said, I need a permit. And they said, where's your commissary? And I'm like, well, if I had a commissary, I wouldn't have bought a food truck. Right. I could afford a commissary, right? And that is, I hear that now from other food trucks. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, if I could have done that. So.
But this is not even just smaller vendors. You'd mentioned to me that Charlie Goodson has just launched his own gumbo that he's selling in the stores, and he can't make it in his own restaurant because of the regulations, right? You have to have a separate kitchen to sell.
Right, he's got a retail kitchen. He needs a wholesale kitchen to produce his wholesale food.
So it's a lot of people need, they may not need the food hub, but they need separate
So Charlie and I
kitchens.
Just kind of came and talked, right? We really weren't able to do exactly what he needed to do, but we also had conversations about maybe where he can go and who might be able to help and things like that.
But that surprised me. I wasn't thinking, he's got this huge successful operation, but even he can't operate out of his own business, the original business.
Right, and how great is it to have your gumbo on store shelves so people can be reminded about Charlie G's and vice versa? I've looked at this for a number of different companies that we'd like to, a number of different kind of local restaurants that we'd love to put there what they're known for, on a store shelf. I think that's great for additional marketing for any of them.
Right.
And now the barrier's been removed for them to be able to do that. It makes it vastly more easier for them to do that. So I think it's an incredible opportunity, but also those kitchens, we had a restaurant the other day that was going through renovation, but they still had to actually put out food for some contracts that they had.
So they can rent space.
So they could rent kitchen space and come in and fill the food for their contracts while they're under renovation. So it's not just like, Susie coming in with her praline and do you think it'll sell? It's also somebody that has, their stuff in 40 stores and they just need a place to be able to store their product and somebody to be able to distribute it for them.
Right.
Right. So, oftentimes when you make those 5,000 jars, you don't want to put that in your garage and build your own website and try and ship it out of UPS yourself. You need some e-commerce fulfillment help. Cajun Crate was one of the best examples of that. I mean, they helped to grow and provide an avenue for local food producers to distribute and to be able to get out and get marketing in those. She has subscription boxes of locally made items. They go all over the country and you need a place to be able to make those locally made items for one. So that was great. It gives, her some clientele, but it also gives the tenants a place to be able to grow.
Right.
It took us, because it's often daunting to be able to get into those retailers and things, especially without any sales reports. It took us 8 weeks to get a local hydroponic lettuce into Whole Foods. Sorry. 8 months, not 8 weeks. 8 months to get a local hydroponic lettuce. So it's, food safe, it's beautiful, it's great, it's consistent. It took us 8 months.
And they don't last 8 months, do they?
No, but fortunately they produce every week.
Yeah.
My cucumber farmer is going to have a heck of a time trying to get their cucumbers in Whole Foods if that's our barriers. Mm-hmm. So, and look, I understand the barriers and it will probably increase barriers now with Amazon, but we needed a faster way to get access and to break down those barriers even for farmers so that we can, really support.
And I can see your brain, Jason's got that computer mind just
we could just go nonstop all day with interviews.
It's fascinating. Yeah.
No, I wanted to break away for a second. And sure. Did you see yourself doing this back in college? And what did you go to college for?
Yeah, so I went to college. I started in accounting and then went to economics. I started in accounting, realized I just didn't want to sit in a desk. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a people person, and I'd probably get bored. But I liked the idea of like making things equal. Mm-hmm. You know, making things actually. There's a logic to that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I enjoyed that, but I knew that an accounting degree really wasn't going to be the best thing for me. Moved to economics, which was good, but also interesting taking economics at LSU. it's in the business school. So I transferred to arts and sciences, that school, and did study political science, studied history. I mean, my electives were constitutional law and business law, right? So I was still like revert to my old business law books, right? I just kind of geek out to that kind of stuff. Yeah. And
I'm thinking general studies degrees. Yeah, come yeah, right. Yeah. I know there's
right.
more to this
and
story.
So that's kind of where we were. Just like, yeah, okay.
Got
kind
a bunch of hours.
We call it now a Zach of all trades. that's cute. I went and realized, you know, kind of where we were and that there wasn't anything that really fit what I was doing. So I went to LSU and looked at their degree programs and realized that nothing fit. And so I petitioned them and to create a new interdisciplinary degree program that was mm-hmm. business, history, and political science, and then graduated in it a year later.
I love this because I've got a younger one that I think is on that same track of, I like this, and this. But I looked it up online, and it's there.
So,
I mean, you can kind of customize
your degree.
So
what that
kind of
made me learn is if you want something done, uh-huh. just go and try and do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And for everything that we try to do to kind of help to have a food hub here and everything, mm-hmm. somebody had to bite the bullet and just go do it. And if you believe in something enough, then you can put that passion towards it and get it done.
I love that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then finally, is there anything else down the pipeline, or is this kind of enough on your plate right now?
Yes.
Do you have some other big ambitions?
Maybe in your free time.
Right, just in free time. Well, you know, I think the development of the products, the Food Hub products would be great because that can continue to have some income for us. But I think September is all about fundraising and making sure that we can mm-hmm. continue to make these services and resources available, spreading the word. So, I mean, really, we can be sustained in a couple ways. Either enough people use the kitchens, or we have enough money coming in to be able to keep the kitchens open. And so we're just not at a place yet where we have enough people using it, mm-hmm. so we still need a little bit of help.
Okay.
But there will be a time when we just won't really need that outside help, and those facilities will be able to maintain themselves. I never really saw myself, right, in a philanthropic way, you know, running yeah. a nonprofit, and more of my background is clearly business. And so when starting this, I wanted to make sure that we were creating something that was sustainable, that wasn't going to be a hindrance on anybody, or we weren't going to have to be, at the mercy of a grant that maybe expired mm-hmm. or something like that. I mean,
yeah.
that's what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to be in the position that we are right now, and we're just not quite enough, right? And mm-hmm. it's taking a little bit longer than we thought. But we had those years to be able to do this. We just need a little more time to do that.
Well, it's still an infant business. I mean,
still
very, years,
yeah, it's still, I mean, clearly know. it's still something we have to explain to people very in depth. And the more people that use this, and so the more people that can really understand how and use that, will really help us to be sustainable.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Besides that, we just want to give people access to food and
yeah,
help
yeah.
to encourage this.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here today. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Thank you all for having yeah. me. This is incredible.
Thanks.
Jason, thank you. I want to encourage all of you to visit AcadianaFoodHub.com and contact Zach McMath and mm-hmm. find out more about these fundraising opportunities, especially on September 30th. This mm-hmm. interview will be coming out before that, Zach.
Thanks.
And I want to thank you for what you've done for our community. I'm grateful because I've sat in enough committee meetings through the years to see that you can talk about something, but
just
to actually implement, you just have to do it, like
yeah.
you said. So thank you for your investment in our community and our culture.
My pleasure.
Grateful
it's,
for
it's
you.
Our community, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, I love this place.
Well,
yeah.
Zach McMath, thank you for joining us today on Discover Lafayette. And yeah. and thank you for listening. For this interview and all of our interviews, you can visit discoverlafayette.net to check out interesting people like Zach that make our community so special. And I encourage you, please, to subscribe to Discover Lafayette on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you get your podcast. Thank you so much. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.